Hi, this is Charles Wiz.
And Tony Silva.
And as always, we're two teachers talking. Tony and I are get together. Actually, we don't get together. We do this through Skype over long distance internet,
undersea fiber optic cables.
And we talk about teaching and teaching English in Japan and teaching at Japanese universities. And recently, we've been talking about being two retired teachers, talking about our teaching experiences. So today, in this episode, which is 178, Tony and I are just going to basically talk about being, you know, two retired guys and looking back and what we think and our opinions and our attitudes. And we have no idea where this is going because this is unusual for us in the sense that we really didn't even talk about the episode so much. So, Tony, we're going to be having this kind of wild, free-flowing conversation.
Two old guys in their rocking chairs forcing the young people to sit down and listen to me. Listen to what I got to say.
Did you buy
you don't
a
know nothing.
Chair?
You don't know nothing. No, I don't have a rocking chair.
Yeah, I don't have a rocking chair, and I don't have a cane, but I do have an attitude.
I once had a Herman Miller Aeron chair, but
I once had one of those, too, and it just fell apart.
Yeah, mine fell apart too.
But after how many years? And the problem was that it was cheaper
right
to
after
buy
warranties.
A new
that's
one.
When it happened.
Yeah, it was past warranty.
Exactly. 1 year out of warranty, it fell apart.
Okay. So a couple of housekeeping things. We'd like to remind people that we're winding the podcast down after so many episodes. And we started this in what, 2012?
Thereabouts.
Yeah. So we've been doing this for about 12 years. And as we've pointed out a number of times, we're both retired, so it actually doesn't make any sense. So last episode,
yeah, we're losing touch. I feel like it. I'm losing touch. I'm, you know, talking about classroom. It's like, yeah, I used to do that.
I lost touch the first time I walked into a classroom. You know, I've been out of it forever. But last episode will be in March, and just letting people know. So Tony. Two old guys talking about teaching and what we wish we know. We've done the one where we've, you know, talked about what we wish.
Yeah, we wish I knew what we.
So where do you think we should start with? I mean, you know, I can go down my.
Do you want to start with like? Do you want to? Because you know,
grumpy?
I'm trying to think about listeners. Do you want to start? I always want to start with students, but in this case, with our audience, I don't know if we want to start with students in the classroom or. If you want to start with like someone being new to Japan, like a teacher in Japan who's in their first few years, I don't know what's the best place to start.
Well, what about students are you thinking of? Give me an idea where.
Well, it's a long, long, long list.
So why don't you get started? Why don't you get started?
Well,
I don't know.
Let's start with like the for the newbies because they need the help the most, right?
Go home now.
Yeah. No, it's I think from what I hear or was hearing that it actually like for younger teachers just starting off, the people who are coming to Japan are more professional. They're not just washing up here randomly. They actually have planned and wanted to come here. Truly, it might be because of anime or K-pop or some other bizarre reason, but it's more intentional. And from what I hear, the teachers seem to be more serious and more professional than 30, 40 years ago, where you know you get off a plane and it's like, oh, I guess I'll be an English teacher. I guess I'll stay here. And then you get offered a full-time job. It's like a tenured position.
You know,
I'm talking about 1985, 1990,
myths.
Right? And yeah, and I've worked for those people. So
yes,
I know.
Exactly. I've worked for those people too.
Those have been my bosses, to my chagrin.
Okay.
But yes, from what I've heard is that the people coming there now are just more professional. Let's sum that up.
Well, I think what
so maybe for them.
Okay. Well, you know, first off, I'm seeing a lot more PhDs.
Well, it's credential inflation.
Yes, right. And, you know, I'm going to start with the fact that if you're teaching English to Japanese college students, and most people are going to be teaching to first and second year students, and your background is in EFL, the master's is enough. You don't need the PhD, right?
Because that's not going to help you at all.
Actually, no. I'm seeing more and more PhDs required for part-time jobs when I look at
jobs. You're going to be required to get the job, but it's not going to help you with your teaching.
Well, that's the whole point.
Because what you do in the classroom is could have nothing to do with whatever you did with your PhD.
Unless, of course, you did your PhD under Paul Nation.
Okay.
You know, who, as I've mentioned so many times, is always like, you know, how do you use this? This is how it's used in the classroom. You know, if you're into some really heavy-duty theoretical thing, I'm sorry, as a PhD, it's good for your research. And if that's what you love and that's what you want to do, fine. But I'm not sure that, you know, there's any need to have a PhD who's teaching freshman students. And okay, here's the thing.
Our advice is going to go to the other end of the spectrum, right? It's going to be brass tacks. It's hardcore classroom stuff.
Right, because the first thing is, as I can tell, you know, okay, you're asking like, what would I say to somebody fresh off the boat? And I'll say, okay, I'll tell you one thing that hasn't changed since I've been here is that you're going to go into a job interview and somebody's going to ask you, and this question gets asked at every interview and it never ends, which is, how do you motivate students to learn English who don't want to learn English? Okay, and that thing of unmotivated students, you know, students who are required to take English. And that's who you're going to be teaching a lot of the time, unless you're lucky enough to be at some pretty high level universities, which you and I have been fortunate enough to be able to teach at.
Yeah, and it's unusual that you'd walk into one of those fresh. You got to work yourself up to that.
Yeah, it takes a long time. And on top of this, though, there has been a decline in, I'm going to just call it student level, student abilities, because, you know, the pool of students has shrunk so much.
The demographics.
Yeah, the demographics have changed so much that the top level schools are pulling everybody up, and we've talked about this before. But at the top level, your top level of students at a top level school, those students have not changed. It's just they don't comprise the majority of students in their cohort any longer. So one of the things is that just realize that a lot of your job, especially if you're teaching the general education, the required English classes, and you're at anywhere from a medium level school, plus or minus on that, you're going to be teaching students who might not, or most likely are not that committed to learning English. And you got to remember, and we've talked about this before too, 90 minutes once a week. In a culture, in a university culture where homework is like, huh, what? You want me to study? Unless, of course, again, it's one of the higher level schools. Or, you know, you're even teaching students who are in an engineering department, but again, they're not that committed English. So get your perspectives correct. You're going to be teaching to a small group of students who you can affect positively. A lot of the time, you're going to be frustrated because the students don't really care, even when you put in an incredible amount of time and come up with some great activities. So the first thing is reset your expectations.
Bingo. So, that's a big one. And and nothing you do is going to prepare you for the reticence of most Japanese students. They have been trained with a one-way instructional mode. They're sit and receive. They're totally receptive. And if you're expecting like some kind of, from the beginning, some kind of interaction, some give and take, some Q&A, you're going to be looking at mannequins. You're going to look into a classroom full of mannequins. There's not going to be any feedback. There's going to be no reaction. There's just going to be stone face, poker face, petrified. What the hell is going on in front of this class? I don't know what this teacher wants from me. I'm not at all prepared for this. And you don't understand because this is a foreign language class. it's quite a shock. It takes a long time. Hmm. One little key for that, it's really stupid, and you're not going to believe me. And if you try it, you'll find out eventually. You'll figure it out. It's like, damn, he was talking about smiling. Learn how to smile. And it's a deep cultural thing. Smiling is really important in Japan. You smile even if you want to rip the other person's throat out. If you've been deeply insulted, to keep the frustration, you smile. And it's an interesting phenomenon because I did a because my wife is was instrumental in setting up a program, in an English language program in Russia. And about 10, 12 years ago, we went for the anniversary of its opening, maybe 10 year, 15, 20 year, I don't know, anniversary of its opening. And I get a really strange vibe walking around Moscow. And I didn't figure it out until I got back to the U.S. or Japan. I can't remember. And I was just like, well, yeah, like, no one was smiling.
Wait a second. I'm sorry, Tony. Are you saying that people walk around in Japan smiling?
No, they don't walk around.
What country are you talking about?
When you interact with them, they
smile.
This
is not the country.
They don't understand. They smile. They're angry. They smile. It's like, no, they don't. They don't. They don't smile on the streets. But in Moscow, it was different. It was palpable. It's like, you know, stores, clerks, any kind of interaction, nobody was smiling. And as an American coming to Japan, I didn't smile a lot. And I went into the classroom, and I didn't smile a lot.
And Tony, you walking into a classroom.
It took me years to learn. Sorry. It took, yeah.
You walking into a classroom and smiling is something it's like, I'd like to see that.
I had to learn to do it. And when I learned to do it, I learned its effectiveness. And it got to the point where each spring, the beginning of the school year, by the end of the first week, my cheeks were sore from all that damn smiling. And as stupid as it is, it's really effective. So anything else, learn how to smile. Learn how to smile. Other thing about New to Japan, the other thing is like it's the role of the teacher. Even, and we're going to get to this too, this is a second that we're following right after this. Even though you're not a Japanese teacher, you're a foreign teacher, you're still a teacher. And there are all kinds of social implications for that in Japan that are completely new if you're not from Japan. The expectations is like what your actual role is. And it's really complicated, and it's too long for us to like ferret out in this podcast. But you are in a very different position. You're neither just a conduit of information. You're not a facilitator. They really expect more from you as a teacher. And it is summed up in the word sensei. Now, whether you pull it off and the students accept you as a real, quote unquote, sensei, that's going to be up to you. And that depends a whole lot on the school that you're teaching at, the students that you're teaching and everything else. And that's a lifelong project. The other thing that's going to be really hard for you as a new teacher is accepting the role of being a foreigner. Now, if you're from Canada, the United States, Australia, New Zealand too, fairly relative to Japan, fairly heterogeneous cultures, and like not being, you know, there's no form, but in Japan, like 97% of the population is Japanese. Like everybody else is in that last 2 or 3%. The Chinese, the South Americans, the Canadians, the Brits, everybody, all of us, we're of that 3%. And the role of a foreigner is always going to be different. And that's always going to be – that also is a lifelong project to accept or not, as the case may be. It's really hard. And I think the other thing about like a foreign teacher coming to Japan is kind of understanding the – university years for a young Japanese person. They've survived the quote-unquote exam hell, not as severe as it used to be at all, even though they still perceive it as such. But it's not. It's not nearly as bad. But there's still a lot of pressure to get into the best university you can. And, you know, middle school, high school, it's been hard. You get you pass your test, you get into the best university you can. And then, relatively, it's easy street. And it's really at odds with what most Western countries think about university education, where it's like, okay, you've had your fun time, now it's over. Now it's like, you know, buckle down, get down on your academics, and as the next step forward, a successful career. In Japan, you know, it may be less than it used to be, but the hard academics are, for the moment, over. And so you, and this is not true at all schools. Everything we're going to say today is like, it's not absolute. It changes from school to school. And there are schools where this is not the case. So if you're a Todai, of course, it's going to be academically rigorous. Duh. At Hyundai, it's going to be academically rigorous. But at other schools, you get in and it's playtime. And we see it that way. A Westerner sees it as playtime. But for them, it's learning other things. Finally, they have free time. Finally, they can explore their individuality, who they are. It's they can make their social connections and so forth and so on. And in many, many schools, that takes precedence over academics, which is anathema to any university teacher, let alone a foreign teacher in Japan. That's the reality, and you're not going to change it. You're not going to change that. So in my head, though, those are like some of the things, like if you're new to Japan, those are the things that are going to be really hard, and I'm going to lean back on my rocking chair here and let Charles take the floor.
Yeah. Okay. Well, the points you covered, I think, are real valid and are very important. And two things came to mind while I was listening to you, Tony. The first one is when you walk into a classroom, is you better learn really quickly that it's a zero feedback environment. You know, you're just as you.
Yes. Mannequins. Mannequins.
I mean, these are zero feedback mannequins a lot of the time. You're going to get one or two students who might respond, and you're going to start having to look for real nuanced reactions. But
you crack a joke and watch for the smile. Yeah.
Yeah. Or are somebody's eyes open? And we've talked about, you know, and how much are the phones out, et cetera, and what kind of environment have you set up? So that's, you know, a big thing is get used to that. And the other thing is that, you know, warning, you know, as we would say, there be dragons and danger, Will Robinson from, you know, back when I was a kid, Lost in Space. But you're going to go in thinking you can change the world. And you're going to go in thinking that, hey, I'm a good teacher. I'm an experienced teacher. I've had positive successes, you know, teaching. And you're going to come out here and most people are not going to experience that. And it's going to be soul crunching.
Yeah, you're going to hit a wall.
Yeah. And you need to be ready for that. And
wear a helmet.
As Tony said, right, we reserve the right to disavow anything that we've said based on exceptions that people will have. But the other thing that's really important is you got to understand that most of the students you're going to teach, again, unless you're teaching at some pretty good schools, are different from you because of the fact that you're actually in education or you have an advanced degree. Assuming that means that you've had those incredible learning moments, those aha moments, those moments when God, it was like, gee, this is so neat to learn. And you're going to be teaching a lot of students who, because of the way they're taught and the way the system works, have never had one of those moments. They've never had a joy of finding things out, of discovering things in a classroom. It's not been a discovery environment where they're exploring ideas. And you got to understand, and that's another thing, they do not have experience exploring ideas. They are taught to produce what the teacher wants and to provide evidence that they have done what the teacher wants. So even at a good school, like when I taught at Hyundai, Tony, and I was using a textbook, and the textbook had comprehension questions. In fact, I think it was your textbook. And
it might have been. You know, yeah, sounds like it.
At the end of the chapter, there are some comprehension questions. And even at a school like Hyundai, this is Osaka University, which is one of the top-rated schools in Japan. I mean, it's really, it's an Ivy League school in Japan, that the students copy and pasted the answers from the text to answer the questions. And I remember I was really surprised, and I brought it up and I scolded them. I said, this is cheating. This is plagiarism. And they said to me, that's what they were taught, that you copy and
paste the answer.
The answer, because that shows the teacher you knew how to answer the question. They weren't answering the question. Okay?
You're just finding the answer.
They're trying to show the teacher that, I can find the right answer in the text. And that is a completely different mindset than the one you're probably bringing over. So be prepared for that. So I think, Tony, we can move on from the student section. But the thing is you're going to come in with some preconceived notions. You think that the students are going to like you and engage with you and interact with you. You think that all the tricks you've learned as a classroom teacher, practitioner in America or wherever you're from are going to work. That is for those of you who are actual teachers, not just coming straight out of a degree program. Get used to the fact that things fall flat. Get used to the fact that what works in one class doesn't work in another, but that's just a natural aspect of teaching. Get used to the fact that your feedback is going to be limited, that you're teaching students who have completely different expectations of what a college life is like. The idea of at one school I teach that the students said, you give us more homework than all of our other teachers. I said, I only give you an hour of homework a week. And they said, our other teachers don't give us any homework. So you need to be ready. Says everything. And as you have said, Tony, the system's designed to fail. It's designed not to succeed. Once a week, you meet your students. You're going to have 25, 30 students in a class. It's going to be really hard to get to know the students. It's going to be hard to achieve anything. So reset your expectations. So that's the student part, okay?
Well, that's the new to Japan part.
The new to Japan.
So now we get to the students in the classroom and the actual teaching.
You mean after you've gotten over the initial shock?
Once you've overcome that initial shock and you haven't run back home and you decide you're going to stay for a few more years. All right.
Yeah. You know, Tony, this one's a hard one for me because I've been doing this for 36 years. And I'm just really tired of students, ignoring me or not. And this is because I'm teaching at one school. You know, and students who just don't care. You know,
that was my next point. It's like, there are some classes you will never win over. And they can put a major dent in your own academic year. And at the same time, there are some classes that will be a joy.
Yes.
And they will reaffirm your decision to become a teacher each time you walk into the classroom. The idea that you have any control over that is often an illusion. Especially when you're younger, earlier in your career, and it's like, yeah, if I do this, I can do this, and win over. No, there are some classes you're never going to win over. There's others that are just going to, and you may have to wait a year or two or three to run into one of these, but when you run into them, they're fantastic. And There are some classes that are just you will always dread walking into the room, you will, and there are other classes that are just you're just going to look forward to, and you don't have any control over that.
Yeah, and there are far more of the ones you dread than the ones you look forward to.
Depends where you teach. It depends where you teach.
Okay, wait. Okay,
I've just been really lucky. But I don't know that that's the case. Certainly early on, absolutely. But by the time that my last 10 years of teaching, my average was pretty good.
Right. But you were at schools that were known for having good English programs, and students were going to those schools knowing that.
So I was lucky, yeah.
No, you weren't lucky. I mean, you were lucky, but you also worked hard and developed a good reputation. I'm talking about people who are new off the boat. Right.
Yeah, it's going to be hard.
Yeah, by the way, and very few people actually come over here with a full-time position. Most of you are going to be working part-time, I'm going to guess, new people. And one of the things that people – you got to remember is that you're going to be teaching 15 classes a week.
Or more. Just,
or more. I mean, minimum three a day, 5 days a week.
15.
Just so you can stay alive. Just so you can make a reasonable income and, you know, live a reasonable life and, you know, be able to pay for, you know, your rent and everything and your, you know, advanced degree, let's say. But you're going to be teaching a lot and you're going to see variation, but, you know, you're going to find that it's really hard to teach 15 classes. And when I say 15 classes, I mean 15 different groups of students.
15 different groups of students and maybe more than 10 preps.
Yeah. I mean, if you were lucky, the minimum, by the way, the minimum you're ever going to have is 5 preps. If you were lucky, it would be one prep for each day. But I don't know anybody who does.
I've never had that.
Yeah. I mean, I've had like one. Here's something else that's really important for you. So you go, oh man, Charles and Tony were wrong. I got 5 days and I only have the same class every day. So I only have one prep every day. And it's like, no, they're going to be so different each period, each class. The variation is going to be incredible. Yeah. And what works in one class doesn't work in another for a variety of reasons. The point I'm trying to make is that you're teaching a lot. 15 is going to be a low load, I think, if you're a part-timer. You know, single part-timer, let's say, or you're the sole income provider, you're going to be tired. It's going to be frustrating a lot of the time. And, you know, we get into this field, and I'm sorry, I got to pop people's bubbles here, but I'm trying to, you know, after, you know, retiring and doing this job, I started teaching when I was 27 years old. So, I mean, really been teaching for 39 years. And, you know, you get into this job because of your love of education, your love of watching the lights go on, and you know, just be aware that you're going to have good days and bad days. And there are some classes that are just going to, you know, destroy your soul. I mean, they're soul crunching, you know, because you care so much. The only people I know who don't get their souls crushed here are people who just like, yeah, you know, it's just a job. I go in and I teach and I do what I'm told. They don't really care. And that's a minority of the people I've met, by the way. Most of the teachers I've met are people who really care. But, you know, if you're new, develop relationships with the older people. Don't look down on the old timers because you think that they're staid or they're bitter or they're mean or something. If you start talking to them, they'll tell you things that you've never heard, the stuff you don't get to hear. And it'll be things about students you might find a little harsh, right? Like, you know, some of the things maybe Tony and I are saying where it's zero feedback. A lot of the students don't care. You're going to go into classes and, you know, their phones are going to be out. You're going to have to tell, you know, they're going to look out the window while you're talking. They're going to fall asleep. They're not going to work hard. They're not going to do the assignments. Be prepared for that. Be open and ready for that because that allows you to deal with it better. But just be, you know, adjust your expectations. You're not going to change the world. You're going to change the lives of some students, but everybody comes over here. And by the way, I gotta get this in, Tony. I know we're talking about students, but you know, everybody comes over and then they, you know, especially people get full-time jobs. They go, man, I'm going to make a difference. I'm going to change my school. I'm going to change the system. And, you know, every person I know who's retired in Japan says, you know, I thought I could make a big difference and I only made a difference on the individual level. You can't do anything. You can't change the system. So give up on that and focus on changing lives. And
I promise
you, that will give you a much more fulfilling career. Do not think you can come in and reform the Japanese system. You know,
yeah, that's big on my list too.
Yeah,
but very, you know, related to what you were just saying is right. And so, you know, you're going to have like problem students or problem class, and there's going to be times when you are sure, you are convinced, you're 100% certain that the best way to deal with this problem student or these problem students is to crack down on him or her and assert your authority. You might be right.
Yeah.
But think really hard before you do. Think really hard. It's a last resort. It's a really big danger. You will alienate the entire class it will ruin your year. It might lose you. You might lose your job. Try to give the student or the class the benefit of the doubt. And take that in its biggest sense, because it really requires you to step outside yourself and your own vision of reality. And you really need to accept that very possibly this student or these students, their worldview is so significantly different from yours, and that maybe it's not necessarily a complete win-loss situation. Maybe there's a way to make that work. And if there's any way possible to try to give the student or the students the benefit of the doubt, may not be possible. It may just be a really, I guess we're in a clean stage. We can't do profanity, but it might just be really a bad person. It might be a bad person. But before you make that judgment, really go the extra mile and try to use the cliches, like walk a mile in their shoes, like think about what might be going on, what their background might be, what their personal problems might be. It's like, who the hell knows? I don't know. For newer teachers, determining the length of the leash is one of the hardest things to get right. Because you're going to have kids in the class that are like, they're all kind of levels of disruptiveness and irritation and stuff. And it's like, okay, when do you yank that leash? When do you give them like another foot or two or a meter? That's one of the really hardest things. And it's a skill. It's like fishing, right? It's like a line. It's like, you don't use like a really heavy line. You use a light one. Cause that's this part of the sport, right? It's like pulling them in without breaking that line. And that's the same thing with teaching. Try to give them the benefit of the doubt. And it's like, we don't have a formula. There's no algorithm. We can't say it's like, oh, this is when A, B, and C happens, then you do X, Y, and Z. No. It's something you have to learn, but be aware that it's something that you have to learn, and it's something that you need to think about and examine.
Well, you are a much kinder person than me. But also, again, I need to reinforce something that you have said often, is it's dependent on the school. And the culture in the school. There are some
school
places,
environment, school culture is a huge.
Where losing it on the students will, you'll get angry with the student and show your displeasure. It's going to make them want to work harder because they've been taught do not, piss off the teacher. That's because they've come up through a pretty good, educational system, whatever good means. And there are other places where it's just like they don't care.
Yep.
And by the way, one thing I need to add to what you said, Tony, and this is for new people coming over. When you discipline students or you scold a student, or as you said, Tony, you lose it on them, you're doing that with, somewhere in the background, an expectation that they will feel guilty, that they will feel guilt. And one of the things you need to understand is they don't feel guilt.
Yeah,
I think.
Of the sword. Yeah.
Right.
No, it's a guilt society, a shame society.
Yeah, yeah, right. But you see, there you
it's
go.
It's not the guilt thing.
Yeah.
It's like the anger of the shame.
Right.
And,
So what you have to understand is that if you think that you're going to use guilt as a way to achieve the behavioral objectives you want, which, is basically what we do. I mean, in
the
West, there's penalties, there's punishment. You need to understand it's not going to work here. When you say to the student, why did you cheat? Why did you copy from the other student? They're going to say, I'm sorry, sumimasen. And they're just saying it. It's formulaic. They're not deeply feeling guilty. But if you point out in front of the entire class, hey, Tato over here, Yutaita Tato, hey, man, why are you copying from your friend? I told you not to do that. You have embarrassed that student.
Yep.
And there are, you've shamed them. And
consequences.
I'm gonna come, yeah, yeah.
That's, depending on his or her social standing in the classroom, it either everyone's going to be saying, yeah, finally they got him, or it's going to be like, this guy's a jerk.
Yeah, well, first, it's – we're talking about stuff you have to learn. Now, here's something you need to know, that if you do some of these behaviors, most schools are not going to back you. They're going to back the student because they're so scared of losing students is number one. And number two, you're going to be treated differently from a Japanese teacher who scolds a student and the student reports them. We just, you know, get used to that.
About the role of the foreigner.
Yeah, just get used to that right away. You know, you're not going to be treated the same. It's not like, you know, Tony.
You're going to be suspect.
You and I are from America, where this concept of diversity and equality and, you know, bringing people in and trying as much as possible to give them the, you know, the same considerations that we would give anybody else just doesn't exist here, okay? And you got to remember, too, by the way, here's something else about the students. A lot of times the students don't understand that you're a qualified educator. They just think you're a native speaker and that you got the job simply because you're a native speaker, because that's been whatever they know about English conversation school teachers, where, you know, they just bring people in and, you know, by the way, there's a good warning sign. If you go to an English conversation school, you get a job and they have like a really, really big like training program. Warning, that means they're not hiring trained teachers. If you're a trained teacher or they're used to hiring trained teachers, it's going to be a limited training program, I think. But, you know, you got to go through that. But the point is, remember that, you know, I disagree, Tony, in the sense that I'm just so tired of negative behavior in the classroom. I don't care anymore.
Okay.
You know, I've been at some schools where I've never seen negative behavior. You know, I've been nothing but lovely students and lovely classes. And again, I'm talking about the fact that you have students who have never enjoyed being in a classroom. And, oh, by the way, before I forget this, you know, you will teach at some places where students think that just coming to class and getting attendance registered is enough to pass the class.
Yeah, right. That's their expectation. That's their total. That's their reality.
Yeah, think about that. If you had gone through college, you know, and you turned to the professor and said, "But I came to every lecture. Why did you fail me?" And the professor says, "Well, you didn't take any of the tests, and you didn't turn in any of the papers." And you turn to the professor and say, "But I came to every lecture." You know, no.
Yeah, and I have two stories that, well, maybe it's two and a half, maybe it's three. I'll try to make them short. That illustrate both of these points. And what you're talking about is like, yeah, and this is even goes farther. I was teaching at a medical school in Kansai. And of course, in this place, it was the culture of that school that, like, well, it was a medical school. German was the language, and English was just kind of a eh. And I said, well, okay, this is a good opportunity. I'm going to use, like, you know, like maybe it's like episodes, because kids were smart. And I'll use like some episodes of ER to, like, for listening exercises and conversation. And the guy, my supervisor is like, no. They get all that in their other classes. We don't want you polluting their brains with this Western idea of medicine. I was like, oh, okay. It was the end of the second semester. It was like the end of the academic year. And me personally, I have like probably one of the worst periods in my life. And this kid comes up. It's a final exam. I've never seen him before. And he says, yeah, hi, I'm sorry. I was registered for this class, but I was embarrassed to come because I failed last year. And I want to take the final exam. I, you know, you talked about doing the worst possible thing. I did the worst possible thing. I shamed this guy. I says, you come into this classroom and you disrespect my students who've been studying for 15 weeks and you want to sit for this exam? Get the hell out of this room. And he's crying. I says, get the hell out of here. Just leave. That happens. At the same time,
can I interrupt you for a second, Tony?
Yep.
Do you feel guilty, or do you feel you did wrong, or did you feel like you did the right thing?
I don't feel guilty at all.
Do you feel any shame?
I feel no shame. I feel no guilt. And it was a small class. I had like 10 students, 12 students. And when they heard me defend them against him, I know that they supported me. So no, I have absolutely zero regret, shame, guilt whatsoever. What his nerve. He's never attended a single class. I said, get out of here. You haven't done any work. You're insane. Out of here. At the same time, we talked about classes that where classes, school culture, etc. And this is one of the place where we used to work together after it went bad. And I was suddenly confronted with students who were really unprepared for being able to function in a university environment. I looked at them and I said, it's a university in, let's say about 2000, 1998, 2000. And it's like, I know you guys. I've seen you guys before. You are the Semon, we talked about like inflation, you know, like credential inflation. It's like, you're the students that used to go to Semon Gakko's, the kind of special skills type schools, tech schools.
Trade schools.
In the early 90s, and I said, yeah, trade schools, yeah. And it's like, yeah, I've seen you. This is who I taught when I first came to Japan. It's like, I know you guys. You guys are not university students. And it was a struggle, and I let them teach me how they needed to be taught. We had some success. The one girl who was basically uncommunicative in either Japanese or English in my class said, we were doing shopping, right? I bought bread. And I came back to the teacher's room and he says, hey, I'm not going to use a real name. I'll say Kyoko. Kyoko said, I bought bread. And it's like, you know, we had a really close group of teachers. We all worked closely together. And it was a joyous moment because she didn't talk. She was how did she get into school? Who the hell knows? Her parents wrote a check. Fine. One of the most troublesome guys that I had in that class, and I kind of geared a lot of the modifications in the class like to him and his little cohort. It's like, what can I give them to do that they will actually do? And I ended up like memorizing / modifying dialogue, creating their own dialogues. You come back and you do the dialogue and get the hell out of here. And I can go home because I had like 6 classes that day. He went on to hitchhike across the United States. And when he finished that, he went back to that university to seek me out. I wasn't there anymore, but I heard that, you know, heard from another teacher. So even though you have some of those classes, which, you know, this is one of those classes, it was the last class of the day and I dreaded it. I hated going to this classroom. There were 45 kids. None of them had any preparation for proper foreign language study. They didn't know how to behave in a class, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It was a Thursday evening. I was exhausted. It was hell. Even in that hell, I bought bread. Hitchhike across the United States. You can still make that difference. And again, you said it like on an individual basis. You're not going to change a school. No, there's no way I'm going to change that school. But somehow, at that point, I was able to reach at least 2. I'd like to think that maybe at a, you know, less level, there were a couple others that I was able to touch or reach. It's like, but yeah, this is 2. It's like, yeah, okay. Yeah, I feel good.
2 is a good year.
Yeah.
Reaching 2 is an exceptionally good year.
That school, that class,
okay.
2, it's like, it's home run.
Yeah.
This is home run.
Let me go back to this again. And I just want to say that, okay, you're new to teaching. Maybe you don't have a lot of experience. Maybe you do. I don't know. But reset, even in America, where I'm from, you know, the idea was if you can reach 1 kid a year, you're doing well. If you can, right, get through to 1 kid and make a difference in somebody's life, 1 person, you've had a successful year. 2 is just like you just won the World Series. But again, adjust to that. But Tony, we're almost at the 45-minute mark here.
Yeah, we're running short. This is
yeah. So I want to move.
Make this a two-parter.
We could. We could just focus on students. I got students. But do you want to keep talking
about – Let's finish up the students.
And you want to do the next, you know, continuation of this is about the
continuation,
really
–
the toxic part, which is your colleagues, like, and the people you work
peers,
for.
Which makes mine is very short, naturally. But we've got administration.
Huh, that's funny because I would say that the students are the least of my worries. The worst.
Well, they're not the least of our worries, but I think it's what we can say the most about. I mean, maybe the first major impact is like for like younger teachers, they haven't listened to us. Yeah, like for us, it's like, yeah, that's the point. These are things we know.
But
these
I'm
are things
thinking,
we know. These are we figured out. But like younger people,
I'm
don't.
Thinking for younger people, yeah, there's a student part. But, you know, I was going to say that for me, dealing with the students was always the easiest part.
Yeah,
experience with dealing with the professors in charge of programs and the other professors.
I mean,
you know, again, just like the students, there's like the good ones and there's the ones who cause you trouble. But you want to leave that one to another episode and we'll just continue with the students?
Yeah, let's do that. Let's do that and then we'll hang that on. Because the whole question of like for younger people, right? Full-time versus part-time. Career decisions. Let's leave that for the next week. Let's keep going with the class.
Okay.
So classes, students.
We've just provided evidence that we did not prepare for this one and we're winging it.
Okay. That's fine.
Yeah.
I think it's good.
You know, I've had those positive experiences. Okay. So something else that's really important, I think, as a beginning teacher is, and I've done some teacher training, you know, I worked with students. And one of the things I did when I was working with the students who are going to become teachers, and I always said this, and it's you are going to hurt students. You are going to make people cry, probably. It's just impossible for it not to happen. And there's a variety of reasons for that. One is that you just, you know, you make a mistake, you make an error in judgment. And the thing is you've got to develop some resiliency to that. It's not like you can just go, oh, I made the kid cry. Too bad. That's not my problem. But I have seen students cry simply because I said, why didn't you do the homework? You're going to have students in your classroom who have emotional levels, responses, reactions, a foundational, minimal reaction. I don't know what I want to call it. Okay.
Who are
so sensitive. And, you know, I've seen this several times in my career where I would simply say something like, you know, I don't understand why you didn't do the homework. Right? Or I would say to a student, stop speaking Japanese to me. I need you to speak English. You know that that's part of the class. And they'll break down and cry.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what did I do? And I feel terrible. You know, I'm trying to figure out what I did. So part of as a new teacher is you're in a zero feedback environment. You're not getting a lot. And what I've noticed is that when you do get a reaction, it's usually a pretty strong reaction and not the one
you've broken through the ice and you're underwater. Yeah.
Yeah.
What the hell just happened?
Yeah. I've gotten through. And so one of the things is just remember that you're really dealing with people who are coming from a very different, not only just culture and language and set of, you know, rules and, you know, the whole pragmatics of Japanese language is a whole thing, but also people who, you know, have different experiences in the classroom and they've gone through some pretty serious things. You know, there's a lot of stories about how teachers are pretty rough on kids in high school, but you know, that's a big thing.
And vice versa.
Pardon me?
And vice versa.
Yeah.
I mean, so many of my students, like, to my shock and surprise, given my experience, when in discussions they're talking about high school, they just wax poetic about – they're rhapsodic about their high school experiences. They love their high school days for the vast majority. Some of them had nightmares, but so many of them are just like talk about how wonderful their high school years were. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to figure out where's my train of thought now. But
I'm sorry.
That's okay. That's okay.
But I think like the students in the classroom, and it's like their experience from high school versus their experience like in your class.
Yeah, and then sensitivities and just, you know, you have crying. Again, even after all these years, and I'm a pretty dense guy, so it takes me an incredibly long time to learn things, I still make assumptions and react. And you have to understand that, you know, that what you do sometimes is going to generate reactions that are quite unexpected and are have a magnitude and an amplitude that you're just like, how did it go from my saying this to
100%.
Yeah. I mean, I had a situation where I said something to a student, and this was like last year, and I was being positive to the student. I was saying something like, hey, you're something like, come on, you can do this. You can say this in English. And the student took it completely wrong as if I was calling, I think they thought that I was calling them stupid. And they just started crying right in front and saying, you don't understand, you don't understand. And I'm like, I'm being really positive here, saying, hey, you did this well. Look how well you did. So, and I felt bad, but I have enough experience and I've developed a thick enough skin, I guess, where I was able to like deal with it and accept it. But I'm going to go back to the fact, just get used to the fact that you're going to hurt some kids. And here's something else, is that I've had kids come back to me. For example, I had one kid. I mean, it's amazing. I was teaching an advanced, I think it was a like independent English learning class or like a listening class or something. I can't remember. And in the first day, I had a bunch of returnees in the class, and this kid was a returnee or something. And this kid was just rude to me. Huh. And I, you know, really, really, really obnoxious and rude, really dissed me. And I said to that student, you come see me after class. And I said, look, you have really good English, and I understand that you're coming back, but you do not talk to anybody with that tone. I said, it's rude, it's condescending. And I said, and that's when you explain to the student that there are only two reasons that a teacher knows your name. You know, and I said, and that's because you've done something incredibly exceptionally well, or you've done something to really piss the teacher off. And I looked at the student, I said, which one do you think it is? And he looked down at his shoes and kind of said, because I pissed you off. And I said, exactly. And the kid just shuffled out of class. And I know a lot of people who would have criticized me for talking to the student that way, right? Because there's this whole attitude, I think, of, you know, coddling students. And I go back and I recommend the coddling of the American mind about how, you know, students need to develop resiliency. Anyway, I told the story to some other teacher, and some teacher said to me, you know, how dare you talk to a student like that? You should have just taken it, accepted it, and slowly guided them. Anyway, I was like, okay, fine, whatever, you know. I'd like to watch your classroom management techniques, you know, because this was a teacher I know for a fact who just lectured, and even if all the students were asleep, would keep lecturing, right?
Sure.
Anyway, at the end of the semester, final day of class, the class is finished. They submit, do whatever we do, say goodbye, and the kid walks up to me and he goes, excuse me, Mr. Wiz. And I go, yeah. And he says, I want to say thank you to you. You're the only teacher I've ever had who's talked to me directly and told me that my attitude was bad. And because of your talk on the first day of class, I completely, you know, did my best to be respectful, and I've had the most successful year in school I've ever had.
Cool. That's so cool.
Yeah, exactly. So what I'm trying to say is that, Tony, you explained really well, you know, about, you know, the idea of, you know, should you say this, should you not, right? You know, that, you know, you're upset.
Trying to see the other side, right?
Right.
And trying to get into their shoes.
And this is where, and again, this is for all you new guys and gals. Oh, I've just been censured for using binary terms. Oh, by the way, we have to do an episode on that. We have to do an episode on that. But seriously.
No, we don't. No, we don't.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. Anyway,
no, we don't. Okay. You can do it on your own.
All right. So anyway. Here I am, and I totally lost my train of thought because that one's just so much more interesting for me, is that you're going to come over with your experience and your degree, And you're not going to have enough experience to know what to do, because a lot of what you've been taught is that teaching is a science, and that there are theory, and that there are research things you can do and experiments you can do to determine the best way to teach. And the reality of it is it's still an art. There is intuitive, there's an emotional, there's a psychological. And in fact, for lack of a better term, I'm even going to toss out that there's, in a sense, there's like a spiritual aspect to teaching. And I don't mean in terms of a theistic kind of thing, but in terms of that people come into this field with this drive to make the world a better place. And that's what I mean by, you know, using that term. And no matter what you do, no matter how much theory you know and how matter what you know, it's going to be a real intuitive process. And here's the thing. You can say, well, intuition is an inaccurate way to react to the world or whatever. But here's what the research shows, research-oriented people, is that the more experience you have in a given domain, the better your intuition is, because it's drawing on a wide range of experience. And intuition becomes defined as your decision-making process that is kind of working at a below the conscious level, but has enough background that it will provide you with a reasonably good solution or response or reaction to the problem.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're right there, like with your zeroing on that word intuition, because it's a word that really doesn't work. It really doesn't really describe what's going on. I mean, there are some things that are intuitive, like maybe fear of fire, but you're talking about these other things in the classroom. I mean, all kinds of examples and things. So like, you know, talk about like, you know, like martial arts, let's like be moving, like defending before actual, what is that? Well, it's not intuition. It's like you're seeing things unconsciously that prompt you to do things, but you saw them. It's not intuition. It's like it's programmed. And what your experience with that returnee, it rings true, because very early on in my career, I got thrown into the deep end of the pool, and at the Semongaka where I was teaching, the guy I hired, my supervisor, needed a walkabout, and ended up, like, unofficially, for the most part, but in reality, heading up their study abroad program, like in my first or second year in Japan. And I did a damn good job, partly because I was so inexperienced, and I was in myself was struggling with my adjustment to life in a foreign country. I had a pretty good idea of what these guys needed to do, and I kind of described it as boot camp. And it's like, this school is okay. Some of you guys are getting like 6 weeks of preparation, and you're going to Vancouver. Some of you guys are getting 9 weeks of for a semester. And some of you guys are getting 9 weeks and you're going to University of, I don't know, somewhere in Texas for a bachelor's program. This is totally inadequate preparation. And so it's like, well, okay, I know. I ran those classes like a dojo, and I drilled the hell out of them. And then when they came back, I had to deal with them. And just like what you had, like you had your student, right? And I had one of the kids, and he comes back, and you know, we're having like our, you know, readjustment classes, and we're in a classroom, and he sits down and he puts his feet up on the desk. Okay, I get it. Again, so I put myself in his shoes. Like, he's going through X, Y, and Z. He's coming back, and I've been in Canada. I know what the hell I'm doing. And the class is like, hey, Shinji, you think you know what you're doing? You don't know what you're doing. And it's like, you're lucky you did this in my class, because you did this in anybody else's class, you're going to be in real trouble. It's like there's Canadian rules and there's Japanese rules. And part of the whole deal is you got to know the difference. I thought you might have learned that, but you didn't. So this is the deal. This is the deal. You don't do that, and you certainly do not do that in any class with a Japanese teacher, because they're not going to get it. They're not going to let it go the way I did. They're going to kick your ass. And if you do it in my class again, I'm going to kick your ass. But that, stepping back there, it's like, okay, when you talk about the differences you can make, and you say, like, with that kid, it's like, yeah, those are the kind of things that you can do if you keep your eyes open, keep perceptive, keep sensitive, think about the students, you can focus in. And when I left Japan, I was kind of surprised and shocked. There were like a number, and it was one of those cultural things I really didn't understand. There was like a couple of students and a couple of staff members. It's like, no, I really have to see you. And when I met them, lunch, dinner, whatever it was, it's like each of them is like, you changed my life. It's like one of my staff members, like she went to California and it was in a special ed program, and she came back and she's in Kobe and she's working a special ed school. One of my other students from this class I'm talking about, one of these returnees, the hell, she came back from Vancouver. She went back to Vancouver. She became an investment banker in Japan. She thanked me. So you talk about the negative aspects of teaching. Yeah, you work your ass off. You work three times as hard as you have to for the money that you get, for the respect that you get. But if you stick with it, and if you really focus on it, you'll make differences in people's lives. And that's the best you can hope for. So maybe that's what plays in for this week.
Small victories.
Small victories. But yeah, they're small, but
they're big.
Not for the people that you affect.
Right. But just recalibrate. You know, you're young, you're coming in, you've got all these ideas, you're at the cutting edge of education technology and, you know, pedagogy, and you're going to come into a place that is not – here's the thing, and get this and be clear about it. It's not a place that's open to a lot of change, and any changes that you do see are probably not major and are not going to have, like, lasting effects. And I've talked about this as it's just cosplay. And you've talked about it as failure by design. Yeah, my whole attitude now is that educational reform is cosplay in Japan. You can't achieve the great things you can do until I think you let go of that part and realize it's going to be your contact with that one kid a year maybe or more. Who you help, who you sit down with, who you give a little guidance. And it's not just going to be, you know, you're being kind. Sometimes it's looking at that kid and setting that kid straight, getting that kid back in line.
Doing the right thing.
That's the art form. Yeah.
Yep.
Just do what you do. Anyway, we're over at about a minute and three.
Yeah,
and
we're
a
about
half,
an
Tony.
Hour. So, okay, yeah, we'll pick that up there. So we'll pick up here next week. And
I'll be quiet.
Right, whatever. But anyway, to underscore what you said, is that absolutely it's like that really realistic expectations and both like acknowledgement of both the what you're not going to be able to do, but at the same time realize the potential for what you might be able to do. And hopefully, your accomplishments exceed your expectations. It's hard work, but hey, man, no grits here.
Lucky you.
Yeah. No, I'm good. Yeah. Lucky. Exactly. It was lucky and effort, but yeah, I mean, I scaled my way up. I got good schools and I got lucky with good classes. I got lucky with good students. And, so I think, hope. I know there's no reason to be, you got to be realistic about the obstacles in front of you and the structural obstacles.
Impediments.
They're impediments. Yeah, they're real and they're unavoidable.
And they're much longer.
They're brutal. They're brutal. We'll probably talk about a lot more about that next month.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that because that can be brutal, but there are real rewards to be had.
Yeah, and I just want to end it with Tony by saying that those barriers that you see in the road in front of you, you think they're like 1 meter deep. You have no idea how.
Don't even try.
You can only see them from the front. And it's going to take you longer than you think. And maybe that's a good place to stop.
There we go.
Okay. All right. Charles Wiz.
Tony Silva.
And we're two teachers talking, and you know where to find us.
Here we go.
Okay, Tony, thanks a lot.
Bueno.
See you.
All right.
Bye.